Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Football Ramble. It's Wednesday the 8th of July. I'm Jules Breach.
And I am Pete Donaldson.
And I am Jim Campbell.
If you hear my voice break, I don't know what's happened to me. I've woken
You're
up.
You're becoming a boy.
It's as if,
You're becoming a man.
It's as if I have been on an absolute bender last night, and I haven't, I promise you. I've not been to a pub since they've opened.
Why have you got three bottles of water with you, Jules?
For some reason, I've appeared to have lost my voice to some capacity. So I'll do my best to get through this without my voice breaking like a teenage boy. How are you both? Are you all right?
Good. Feeling strong. I've also got a bit of a funny throat.
I've got a normal throat.
Oh, you're usually the one who's very unwell,
yeah,
Jim.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Typhoid Mary most of the time. Although she didn't show symptoms, did she? But still, maybe... No. Well, there we go then. I'm definitely ill and I've given it to you.
No.
That's probably what's happened.
Spormaster. Let's blame Jim, yeah?
Exactly.
Right. Lots of football to talk about, as always. There's four games tonight, but there were three matches last night. They were all pretty good, actually. Jim, you were saying that you feel like the Premier League has now kind of kicked into gear and everyone's got into the swing of things and the games have been pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. It's sort of what happened in Germany, really, isn't it? It was sort of a bit flat and everyone looked a bit confused and rusty to start with. But now
like
it's really kicked into gear. Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's the same thing. It's good. It's good to see it. It's been sort of relentlessly good. Like the weekend onto last night has been pretty entertaining. Do we need fans? Do we need
yes,
fans at all?
Yes, of course we do. yeah, we do.
I said that the new FIFA should have those cardboard cutouts, and I just think that would be much easier for everyone.
Nice option.
Much easier to deal with, even if some of them are Osama bin Laden in these cases.
Well, let's start with the game at Selhurst Park last night. A 5-goal thriller. Chelsea beating Palace in the end by 3-2. It was a very entertaining match. Chelsea needed that win. It leapfrogged them over Leicester. Leicester then had the chance to regain that third place, but they didn't quite do it. We'll get on to the Arsenal. Or Leicester draw in a bit. But Chelsea, what about their first goal? I think a lot of people are talking about whether they should have stopped because of Cahill's injury. I don't agree with that at all. You've got to play on.
He could have been fooling around. It could have been all kayfabe. Could have been nonsense.
Exactly. Could have been like a stage faint.
I think people might have been thinking that because he used to play for Chelsea and they're like, oh, you don't really care about your mate anymore.
No.
Not mates anymore.
Or maybe it's in his contract. like as part of the agreement. It's like, all right, you know how like sometimes there's like a sell on fee or a first option. It's like, yeah, he will have to just like stack it.
Yeah,
he will have to pretend to fall over in one game in the future. I don't know how that works. I'm almost certain that's illegal. But yeah, it was, you knew straight away. It was like, oh no, this is a bad one. Mm. When someone goes down, sort of like it not in a challenge in that way. It's just
Michael
like,
Owen.
Yeah,
it would do it to every single knee. He'd sort of go,
and bit
nothing
of me
twist
stopped.
Or bend. Just that, like his leg would go, no.
Yeah, stop. God. Yeah, I feel for Gary Cahill. But yeah, I mean,
when I would want
Arsenal to carry on in that situation. I'm sure you guys are saying about your own teams.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is it's just one of those situations. They play on, they score the goal, they then make it 2-0 Chelsea, and then let's talk about Zaha's goal. What a goal that was!
It was like a child trying to catch the keeper, trying to catch like a helium balloon that they've just let go. It's rising. It's just never going to stop rising. It's wonderful.
Should Kepa do better?
I don't know. It was just an upward trajectory.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've been ragging on Kepa a lot, really, lately, haven't we, for not getting to things. But I think I think that would be a harsh one to say he should do better on that. It's just because it's got that kind of late swerve, which is, how do you do that? Do you do that?
If it kept going, it would come back in a sort of donut circle and go back in the net again, I would think. Like a fairground loop. You know what I mean? Because it was sort of rising and then it would presumably start, figure of eight. Infinity ball.
It was an incredible strike though, wasn't it, Pete?
It was an infinity ball.
An infinity ball. His first goal, Zaha, since December when he scored against Brighton, funny enough. So it's been a long time coming for him, but good to see him back on the score sheet.
It was. It was matched only by Willian taking one right in. It was a lot, last night there were a lot of matches in which someone took a ball to the face at speed. Willian took one, I think, early in the match and his nose was streaming, absolutely streaming, and he lifted his finger to, he was kind of like on the floor on all fours, he lifted his finger to his nose and popped it in his mouth. I saw it, William, because your little nose was streaming.
Wow.
And you didn't want to, so I think it was the first on screen nose pick of the season, I think.
Oh, I thought you meant like his nose was bleeding.
Yeah, no, it was just streaming.
Right.
Not with blood.
With snot.
Or possibly spinal fluid. I don't know. It could have been anything.
Are you telling us that he picked his nose and ate it live on telly?
In a manner, yes. I saw it, mate, because we've all done it.
Have we?
Yeah.
Maybe when I was like 5.
Oh, I do. So I've got massive nostrils like a cave up there.
It doesn't make it a buffet, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Like
it doesn't make it a buffet.
I remember, obviously, as we all remember, I'm sure Yogi loved doing that as well.
A far worse version of that.
He had everything, didn't he?
He really did. He kept doing it.
He must be patient zero on something. Wow.
Oh, God. I don't like hearing that about Willian. I like Willian.
Yeah.
For a moment, I thought you meant he was bleeding and then he sort of drank it like a vampire.
Like about getting high off your own supply vampire.
Vampiric onanism, should we call it?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Are you judging Willian now?
I am. And I don't want to be because I like Will.i.am. And I always call him that. And I know it's become that thing in my head. I call him Will.i.am.
But
I do like him. And I'm sad to hear that he's eating his own snot, frankly.
His nose was streaming. It went on his finger. The finger went in the mouth. I saw it. Nobody else did. But I did, and I would like to point that out, okay?
Hang on. So, let's back up. What do you mean only you saw it? If you saw it, how do you think... Why do you think only you saw it?
Nobody mentioned it on Twitter. I wrote, Willian knows nothing, all right? I was the only
Interesting.
One.
Interesting.
Okay?
Okay.
You know the feeling when you get hit in the nose, and you're like, oh dear. But instead of just wiping it on your trousers like a normal person...
I don't get hit in the nose very much, so I don't know.
Yeah, you do. You always hurt yourself.
Maybe eating snot is the secret to his decent form recently.
Yeah.
Because he's probably been one of Chelsea's best players since the restart.
It helps you with dead ball situations, apparently.
Snot doping.
Yeah. He has been great, isn't he? I think he get another couple of assists yesterday?
Yeah, 2 assists last night. 4 goals since lockdown, so he's been on
wonderful.
Fire.
I mean, he's been the same Jazzy for a little while now, but he's certainly returned to action with some performances. But Chelsea, I think, as a whole, look really, really good in possession. But as soon as they lose it, they just look absolutely feckless. It just becomes, as soon as the opponents get a goal or have a good chance, it just seems to be a bit sloggy. Yeah, you hit me, I'll hit you. You hit me, I hit you. Which is exactly what happened yesterday. I mean, you talk about Pulisic getting better and better, like at a fantastic time for a 3-0 deficit overturning in the Champions League against against Bayern. But I think I think Chelsea and Frank need to take a good look at how they sort of approach games. He has become a bit of a manager who does really well out of substitutions. I'm trying to... what was that film? The Adjustment...
Bureau?
The Adjustment Bureau. I'm trying to get the Frank Lampard Adjustment Bureau sort of to stick as a nickname, but it's not as such. But yeah, he seems to do really well out of substitutions. But just start the match like that. Start with a game plan. Start like you know which opposition you're facing. But at the moment, I don't know. There are a lot of poor teams at the bottom of the table, so I think they'll be all right when it comes to screaming towards Champions League qualification. But
yeah, I think, man. Obviously it's a weird situation to judge anyone's first season on because of what's happened, but I think a lot of people would be very happy with Lampard's first season. Mm-hmm. It is an achievement.
Yeah,
I think even if they hadn't finished in the top four, I think he'd have been given another season, but they look nailed on for that. It's interesting, they've got a lot of exciting players coming through, haven't they? But they are mostly attacking players. And you wonder, especially because they've strengthened with Timo Werner and Ziyech coming in as well.
Yeah.
You wonder if they will dip into the market for defenders as well.
I mean, they have to. I mean, Kurt Zouma at the end piling in with a fantastic tackle. I thought that was a penalty all in the first time I saw it. I was like, why has he done that? That's insane behaviour. But fantastic tackle at the end. I enjoyed the fact that, talking about, you look at the conditions yesterday in a lot of the matches, the water breaks mean nothing at the moment because it is quite chilly. It's raining, it's chucking it down. I really enjoyed Gary Neville at the start of the week. He was so angry with the water breaks.
Yeah.
He was so angry with the water
what
breaks.
What was he saying? Matches.
He was sort of going, they're just using it as a tactical kind of adjustment.
Which is fair.
Which is fair, they are. I mean, the keeper doesn't need to be there, does he?
No.
The keeper doesn't need. He's got his own water bottle. He can drink whenever he wants.
Unless you're Pep Guardiola and you're doing an Edison talk and he's not even there and he's absolutely raging about it.
Yeah, I forget which game it was in because I feel like I've watched 40 games in the last 2 days.
They all blend into one, don't they?
But there was one of the commentators was saying to the co-commentator, it might have been Gary Neville, at one point, do you think the water breaks will stay in the regulation season? And whoever it was like, No. Of course not.
No,
it's just because it's summer. We're going to have like a soup break like every 20 minutes in the winter. Like, of course not.
I think we drink too much water anyway. You know what? You know my opinions on water. You guys are casual water consumers.
Mm, more bubble tea for you, isn't it?
I just never drink water.
Are you a dehydrated man?
No, I don't know. Maybe I am, but what? I just remember before the 90s, nobody drank water. It just wasn't a thing.
What colour?
Before the
90s,
nobody drank water.
We were chewing silica gel packets before then.
What colour's the toilet bowl when you go to the toilet, Pete?
I eat a lot of asparagus. It is obscene, the things that come out of me.
Oh, God.
Oh, let's move on. Benteke scored.
Yes.
His first goal at Selhurst Park since April 2018. Even Roy Hodgson thought it was funny.
Yeah.
That's not nice, is it?
He was laughing, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, but Benteke adds so much that isn't goals. When he scores a goal, it's really, really nice. I like it.
Yeah, I was pleased for him, actually, to get another goal at home. Now, Jorginho, he's an interesting story when it comes to Chelsea. He came on for 10 minutes, but he's yet to start a game since football returned. Mm. His hair, he's not gone to the barbers yet, has he?
He's growing
out of control, as is his beard. but he can pull it off, actually. What do you think his future holds, and will it be at Chelsea?
I have a feeling that he's just sort of inexplicably linked to Maurizio Sarri, and that they'll be reunited in some way at some point. There's been talk of it, so obviously it doesn't just come from nowhere. But yeah, I think...
There's word that Frank's already made his decision on it.
Like, yeah.
Get out.
He's such a specific type of player, isn't he, Jorginho? He does the role that he performs incredibly well. So actually, I would think he'd be a really useful player to have in a squad, especially now, because I know we're going to come onto this, but there's talk that for next season, 5 subs might still be allowed. So I think with that in mind, I wouldn't think about selling Jorginho or getting rid of Jorginho in a situation like that where, tactical flexibility is probably, in at least the short term, about to become a bit more of an important thing within a game. But yeah, it does seem that maybe he feels like he just makes things a bit too intricate and slow. Perhaps I feel like Lampard likes to move the ball very, very quickly and likes his team to be sort of quite open in an attacking sense. And maybe something about the way the tidiness of Jorginho doesn't suit that for him.
But he was an expensive footballer. If you're playing like a 19-year-old Billy Gilmore over the top of him. Like it's just and Conte obviously was out of the picture as well for Selhurst Park. So it was an interesting decision. I think the writing's on the wall for Jorginho, though. I think he's going to leave at the end of the season. But then who gonna buy him? No one's got any money.
Well, it doesn't strike me either, Jim, with what you're saying about the five subs rule, that Jorginho is the sort of player that would be happy to sit on the bench and just come on for cameos in matches. He wants to start games. And I think that what you're saying about the amount of players Chelsea have, particularly in midfield, they're flooded with talent now.
Yeah.
It's so hard to kind of predict who Frank Lampard's going to start for games. And I think that that kind of shows you how much depth they have, but also that it's likely that someone like Jorginho probably will move on.
I think maybe Lampard's very, very keen to put his own style on this team, isn't he?
He likes the romance of youth.
He does, very much so. And maybe it's just a sort of coincidence of timing that Chelsea happens to have this really, really good crop of players coming through. But I think Jorginho is a token of, like a symbol of the former regime, weirdly more so than anyone else, because I guess Sarri has this close relationship with him. But I think, maybe
he's cigarette damaged.
How has this situation like worked out so well for Chelsea? It seems like they've got these amazing... They've got all these amazing players coming through. They've now got loads of money in the bank because of the transfer situation. I am jealous, but I also think that the fact that they have aligned themselves so well with a global pandemic is further proof that they're just inherently evil and must be stopped.
Is it not just like the 15 years or the 10 years since a lot of money got injected in the club, got injected into the scouting system, and got injected into the developmental system as well? So all around London, you see lads in Chelsea tracksuits, and they can't all be first teamers. They must all be in the youth setup.
As you say, though, they've done incredibly well in Frank Lampard's first season. I think that any Chelsea fan at the start of this season, if you said, would you take the top four finish, they'd have snapped your hand off for it. And I don't even think fans of other teams would have expected Chelsea to finish in the top four. And I think that result last night, albeit it was against Crystal Palace, who haven't really got anything to play for. It was an amazing match, very entertaining. Crystal Palace put absolutely everything into it. They could have got an equaliser right at the end. What a moment that was.
It was, did it hit the post?
Yeah, hit the post from Scott Dan.
Oh man, that was so gutting because his body shape was perfect. I was gutted that that didn't go in because we might have seen another goal after
exactly, that. Exactly, exactly. But an incredible result for Chelsea. For me, I think it looks as though they should be able to hold on to a place in the top four. And for me, it will be whoever takes that fourth spot now.
I think it's more than holding on to it. I think you've got to look at Chelsea and think they're the best of the rest. Like, I mean, obviously Leicester have fallen away quite a bit, and that's a conversation for elsewhere. But I think, realistically, given the absurd quality of Liverpool and Man City, I don't think Chelsea could have asked for more, really. And it's... It's worked out weirdly well for them again.
Well, the Man City picture, and you know whether they're going to enter European competition next year, that's going to clear up in the next 7 days, hopefully.
Yeah, we should know.
So people will know how many points they need to secure Champions League qualification. Newcastle United being one of them, of course.
It could go right down to the final day of the season, which would be very exciting for those European places. We will talk about Leicester, Arsenal in a bit. But first, the other earlier game last night was a big one at the bottom of the table. Watford beating Norwich 2-1. Welbeck with an overhead kick to secure a crucial 3 points for Watford. That was his first Premier League goal since joining Watford as well, which is quite something. What a way to get off the mark. And it now means Watford are 4 points clear of the bottom three.
That's pretty massive, isn't it?
That ratio of kind of like how important a goal is and how good a goal is. Beautiful.
Yeah.
What a pineapple pen.
A wonderful sort of convergence there. Now, I have a theory on how to judge the relegation battle at the moment.
Go on.
I think this is something I'm going to just try and keep an eye on throughout the rest of the season as it goes. So I've got two mates who actually don't know each other who are passionate Villa fans. And as we've discussed before, Villa are quite underrated as a sort of put upon fan base, where sort of like if there's just a sort of sense of like perennial things are going to go wrong around Villa.
Right.
And
they deserve it.
So it seemed,
I hate Villa.
Well, basically, because I sort of like, I watch Villa with an eye on my, the well-being of my friends.
Yeah, sure.
Totally. It feels like in this relegation in this relegation battle, if something is bad for Villa, that thing will happen.
Right.
Watford getting this win, especially with Norwich going 1-0 up, I felt that kind of defeatist kind of feeling sort of that you get around your own team quite often. And it's like, yeah, this is, they'll turn this around. And of course they did with a Danny Welbeck overhead kick. Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me? And still it went wrong for poor old Villa, and they've got Man United up next as well. So that's a shame for them. But I mean, obviously that's not to take away from Watford and digging
and
in.
And their overhead kicks.
And their overhead kicks. But Watford...
67% of Watford goals scored since February have been overhead kicks.
Come on.
What a statistic.
Trevor Sinclair's involved here somewhere.
That is mental, isn't it?
That is amazing.
Nearly 70% of their goals have been overhead kicks.
Is that? I mean, I've not been watching Watford that closely. That sounds really good, right?
Yeah, but they've not scored many goals.
Is that because they're just trying to score everything with an overhead kick?
No, they just haven't scored many goals.
Yeah, but then the number is 67, so that's not a round number. So at least there must be a few goals in there to choose from. Fantastic.
It's unbelievable.
Very enjoyable.
There's nothing more that I think fans love to see than an overhead kick, especially when it's a winner.
Well, I think with that whole match, everyone was really, really nervy. And as soon as you saw that goal, you're like, good. That was a part of the match that I really, really enjoyed because the rest, I think a lot of teams that are down the bottom are just feeling each other out, and nobody wants to make a mistake, and everyone's playing within themselves. Nobody wants to express themselves. And to see that in a football match, it's like, oh, thank you.
Exactly. I love it. Like, because I think one of the things about overhead kicks that we all love that they don't perhaps get enough credit for is like, that's, you've scored a goal upside down.
Yeah.
You're playing football upside down. Like, that is, ooh, that is confident.
Yeah.
Watford are fine if they can play upside down.
I kind of felt sorry for Tim Krul because I do have a bit of a soft spot for Tim. But I mean, you can't. There's no information you could write on the side of a water bottle that would tell you how to stop that one. Goodness.
Well, how do we feel about Norwich now? Do we feel sorry for them? Because I think it's getting to a point now. I mean, when they went ahead in the game, I thought, ooh, because we know how talented some of their players are, Buendia particularly. And I couldn't believe when I heard in the commentary that that was actually his first Premier League goal. Mm. I feel like he's done so much more than that this season. He's created so many. I think he's actually created more chances than any other player in the league this season. But for that to be his first goal, I don't know what that says about Norwich, or whether that's just kind of a tale of his season. I don't really know, but it's interesting that was his first goal of the season when I think he's actually been one of their best players.
There's a lot of individual stories in Norwich, isn't there? Yeah. Like Pookie at the start of the season, all that stuff. Like
Campwell as well, having a great time.
So I think for me, when the final whistle went and Mario Francic, he leathered the ball as hard as he could, and instead of it going into the stand where he was aiming, he just hit a hoarding. And I think if that sums up Norwich this season.
Yeah.
Going for the moon and falling far short of it, unfortunately.
Luke has obviously spoken a lot about people saying to him that Norwich are actually really good, blah, 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 blah. And obviously, you know, they're where they are for a reason. So it's not entirely true. But I think the thing with Norwich is whenever I see them, there are periods where they look good. And those have dropped off as their confidence has ebbed away. But like, they just can't put a game together, let alone a run. And it's just never going to be enough.
That's it, isn't it? It's the fact that they can't do it for 90 minutes and even really for a full half. I was at the Norwich-Brighton game on Saturday working, which was my first experience of football behind closed doors, which was strange. But actually, again, what I've said since the beginning of this is you quite quickly get used to it.
Yeah.
So even though it was strange and we had to all sit sort of 10 seats apart and you have to wear your mask at all times in the stadium, and obviously there's not a lot of atmosphere at all, but you do hear a lot of like shouting from the players, the managers, stuff that you wouldn't normally get to hear. So I found it actually quite a fascinating experience. And I had a headset on, so I was listening to the commentary and I would take the headset off every now and then just to hear what was happening in the stadium as well. So I had a little bit of both, and I had a bit of the crowd noise from the commentary and obviously the commentators. And then when I'd take it off, I could hear the real sounds. And I feel like with that game, it was a typical Norwich performance. You know, they started pretty well. They had spells in the game where they could have scored, maybe should have scored, particularly late on when they hit the post against Brighton. But I just feel like they make too many mistakes. And then when you're playing in the Premier League, the teams are too good not to make the most of those mistakes.
I think it probably sends the wrong message. I think the Championship teams that come up, don't try and play football. Don't try and be expressive. That's the thing that saddens me about Norwich's demise, because they did come up and they did play some nice stuff at the start of the season.
That has worked for teams before as well. You know, coming up and just, you know, like Bournemouth were a good example of that. I mean, Leicester, when they just stayed up before making it. We quite often it's the case that the team that wins the Championship does it by being really swashbuckling and really, really sort of just really forward thinking and good. But obviously the difference in the Premier League is is so massive that you might have to change a game plan entirely. Yeah. So I hope that that doesn't act as like a sort of cautionary tale too much. We want teams coming up trying to play good stuff, right?
Jules, who does the commentary when you're kind of, is it just the people who are broadcasting it, or is there like an in-house? So you get the broadcast.
Yeah, because I was working for BT, so I had BT's commentary. So right. I had Ian Dark and Jermaine Genus, who were there at the stadium.
So you can look over and you can see them doing the commentary,
and it's in my ear at the same time.
Can you try and like get yourself on?
Hey, JJ, what's going on, mate?
I probably could have tried. Actually, funny enough, when Brighton scored, I had to do that really awkward thing of like not celebrate when your team scores. So I sat there and I kind of went like in my seat. I gave it a little fist pump in my seat. The Brighton player didn't hold back when the final whistle went. It was unbelievable. But anyway, enough about Brighton, which I'm sure we'll talk about because they're playing Liverpool tonight. But for Norwich, it does mean that they will officially be relegated if they lose to West Ham on Saturday. And I do really feel for them. I feel like the writing's on the wall. But after working there at the weekend, they're such a lovely club. And Daniel Farke takes defeat really well and was such a nice man to interview, even though they lost.
Did you hear him giving instructions during the game?
Yeah, a little bit.
So what's the voice like when it's a bit louder?
The same.
Really?
Exactly the same.
Tut, push up, push up. Is it like that?
Exactly.
Oh, I love it.
Exactly the same. He also, he complimented my blue dress just before the interview. Yes. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that it was actually a jumpsuit. Get your garms right, Daniel.
Well, it's that sort of, you know,
it's a romper.
Lack of attention to detail that's got his club in this sort of
romper.
Trouble, isn't
but
it?
No, he is a lovely man. So speaking of garms, actually, did anyone see Nigel Pearson last night in his post-match interview? Yeah, he was wearing short-sleeve t-shirt with a gilet.
It's
surely
amazing.
That defeats the purpose of the gilet, because the gilet's there to keep you warm, but he's like, my arms, they don't get cold.
Was the gilet open?
Yes.
There's a lot going on there, isn't there?
It's a proper, like, busy dad day look, that, isn't it? Like, I'm going to go down the garden centre.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have a couple of pints with my brother-in-law, maybe.
It's a man...
up a party later on.
Yeah.
Can I just make the point that, obviously, you said already, Jules, that Norwich will be relegated if they lose to West Ham. West Ham winning would be terrible for Villa, so West Ham are going to win. Going to happen.
That's
keep
the
an
theory.
Eye on.
Thanks right for now. That. All right, we're going to be talking about Arsenal-Leicester next and an insane game from Italy.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You're listening to the Football Ramble with me, Jules. Pete and Jim are here as well. And in a minute, we'll talk about Arsenal-Leicester drawing 1-1 last night and AC Milan beating Juventus 4-2. But before that, Jim, you mentioned this a minute ago about the five subs rule. This is a report that we read in The Athletic. Apparently, IFAB might continue with these five subs going into next season. Do we like that idea?
Yeah, I think the idea is because obviously there's going to be a shorter pre-season, isn't there? And some leagues are on different schedules, so it's all to do with that. But I don't love it, you know, because it has changed things, isn't it? Of course it is an advantage for the teams with the deeper squads. And I understand that IFAB have to treat everything as if it's a level playing field and they can't make exceptions for stuff like that. But it's going to make next season quite different. Like a whole season where the concept of substitutes is expanded. Mm. That does give you a big sort of advantage in terms of your sort of tactical flexibility. I'm sure they'll keep the periods.
I call my substitute bench now a cinematic universe. Just sort of I could pick from anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Juz, may I first say that your blue dress is looking IFAB today. I would very much like to see teams be allowed to bring in loan players on the pitch. Like, extend it to not only the substitute bench, but Chelsea could bring in all of their 100 loanees just to like play whenever they fancy.
Literally parachute
chopper
in.
Them in. Yeah, chopper them in. I think that would be cool. Nice and fair.
I imagine coming off the bench from the sky.
I'm sure Katie's done it. I'm sure
this
Keegan's
is the sort of stuff that IFAB don't talk about. This is why I find them a bit square for
there'll
my taste.
No, there'll be one person in the room talking about possible helicopter substitutions, but, you know, there'll be everybody else saying, Peter, shut up. Let's move on. We can't be saying this out in public.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we've already touched on, I expect they will keep the three windows of substitutions. So it's like you can't break it up too much.
I don't really understand why they are going to carry on with it, because surely the whole point of that was to protect the players in this kind of intense period of football where the games are so close together and they've not had proper pre-season and all of that kind of stuff. Whereas for next season, when, you know, the players will hopefully have a bit of a break between this one ending and the new season beginning, and the games will be more spread out, they're obviously probably going to change around when the European competitions are, when the League Cup is, if it is, if that comes back. You know, there's all these sort of things that might change for next season. I don't really understand why they would need to keep the five subs, even though actually as a football fan, I think that in this period, it's been a good thing to have, because if anything protects the players, then I'm all for that, absolutely. And I think that it's up to the managers to kind of make the most of it, because I think a lot of people assume that having five subs is only going to benefit the teams who have the more quality in their squad. So, of course, it's going to benefit the teams that are in the sort of top eight, top 10. But if you look at the teams who have made the most substitutions, Brighton are actually one of the top three. So
I think it's Brighton, Man United and Liverpool have used the five subs every time, I think, or certainly leading the kind of numbers on that.
And I think that's down to the manager, isn't it? And down to being flexible. Graham Potter is a manager who, from the start of this season, we've seen be completely flexible, even during matches. He might start with one formation and change it two times during a game. So for him, having the ability to bring on five different players actually works to his benefit, which is why we've probably seen Brighton make so many substitutions. And I think that maybe it's a learning curve for other managers that actually Brighton don't have the best depth. We don't have extremely high quality on the bench. Yes, we've got a few decent players that can come on, But we've managed to make that work to our advantage, having the five subs.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the playing field that managers will be looking at, won't it? It's like, you know, it is another, rather than decry it, you've got to get on with it. I mean, you've got to find ways to use that to your advantage. I mean, do you imagine in the past, like a Sam Allardyce team, like every 5 minutes they bring on another defender? Like, it was, that would be an absolute nightmare. But that would be an example of how actually you can level it up. You can use it to your advantage, and it's, yeah, you know, that advantage isn't going to be the same as a Chelsea or a Liverpool or whatever. But, you know, it is still there to have the best made of it. Like Steve Bruce, every 10 minutes, another long staff. Like, how many of these boys
are
there?
Out of this sausage machine, these ginger sausages come out. Very, very enjoyable. Yeah, or just I think is it to do with the fact that they're obviously tightening up how many loan players you can have out on loan? It's going to be very, very stringent. But then you've got feeder clubs, which kind of sees that rule off anyway, and partner clubs. But is it just kind of like being cognizant of the fact that squads are probably artificially going to get a little bit bigger from next season, because they are going to be making those restrictions on loanees. And so there is a kind of like situation where you are going to need to bed in and blood certainly younger players. It can only be a positive step, but does it take a little bit of the tactical nous out of the game? I think it probably does.
Certainly, you know, shift it somewhere different. I hope it doesn't become permanent after
that.
I'll be like, you know, it's a bit Sven England kind of, you know, getting a half time and you're coursing 4-0 and you just change the entire team.
Right? Yeah. It's
just, it might get that situation where the bigger teams absolutely put teams to the sword. They change their entire team, and the team that comes on, they've got something to prove. Oh my God, there's more goals. Mm. So you may see absolute shellackings, or you may see players coming on who aren't ready to step up a level. So it's going to be exciting. I'm not sure it improves the game fundamentally. Mm. Yeah.
It's a bit more like American sport.
It's a bit Scottie Pippen's injured. Get a nice bath in on him, and then he comes back on for a bit, and then off and then on.
I mean, that said though, maybe that's a sort of Anglo-centric way of looking at things. Maybe in three seasons, actually, it will be good. The game will be better for it. Who knows? I guess, you know, we're going to have a full season of it to figure out potentially.
But it's a lot of change, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it VAR is coming in, five subs. Well, there's a lot of change.
IFAB have also spoken about tweaking the offside rule. I don't know exactly how they're going to do it, but they are trying to fix this thing of like armpit being offside or whatever, because it's, you know, everyone hates it, whatever you think of VAR, even if there's anybody left that likes it. That is stupid and needs to be fixed. So it's good that they're looking at that as well, and like making quick, you know, decisions.
In the new technological age, I think all rules need to be looked at in every situation, and how VAR is obviously administered being at the top of a very, very long list. So next season's going to be very interesting. I think starting the next season is going to be very interesting, and hopefully there'll be a vaccine in place so we don't have to worry about this sort of thing for next season.
Yeah, well, talking about VAR, Jim, that brings us on nicely to Arsenal-Leicester, where there are a few moments. It ended up a 1-1 draw, Arsenal down to 10 men, and Nketiah sent off. Let's start with the Nketiah moment before we get on to VAR with the potential offside for Vardy's goal and everything else that happened in the game. Do you think Nketiah should feel a bit hard done by, or was it a red for you? You're quite happy as an Arsenal fan?
I think, yeah,
Arsenal fans are never happy.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Boo-hoo boys.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I wasn't surprised to see him go. It is one of those ones where obviously they took a long time, so there was a little bit of uncertainty, but it was pie, wasn't it? He certainly could have caused some quite serious injury, and it was dangerous play, effectively, wasn't it?
Well, Leicester were in the ascendancy, and Arteta brought him on to do exactly that job, to disrupt, to work hard.
I wouldn't say he brought him on to do exactly that.
not exactly that. But it was very rainy, the conditions, you know, I could see that in another pre-VAR game being very much a yellow, but... I really felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
It was Abe Simpson, Bordello.gif. Yeah, in and out.
I did feel bad for him. He spent longer on the pitch waiting for the red card decision than he did actually play football.
Yeah. That's great.
And that kind of is part of Nketiah's game. He's he buzzes around and gets in players' faces, and it's unfortunate that it's just...
I think Arteta will be like, arm around, so look, you may have literally lost us some points there, but he was brought on to do that job. I thought he I did very much feel sorry for him, but it'll be fine.
It is a very, very unwelcome stumbling block, I have to say, because Arsenal have been in good form and they've been in good sort of consistent, kind of solidly disciplined form. So that's a game that I think they should have put to bed. I think they were good for a two-goal lead, I think, at that point, but didn't take the chances. It's a shame Lacazette was offside when he was, because he could have been onside. It was one of those ones. If he'd just, you know, if his positioning had been a bit better. But yeah, I mean, every point is so crucial. Arsenal's hopes of finishing fifth are really quite slim, I would think, especially now. So they're realistically looking at getting the maximum out of everything. And this was an opportunity. And not just with Jamie Vardy, but with Leicester, and especially after they picked up against Palace. Even 15, 20 minutes against them with 10 men, you know they're just going to keep coming at you. You know that's probably what's going to happen. And it is frustrating, but I think if you look at the wider context of the season, I think probably 9 times out of 10 in that situation they would have scored. And, worse Arsenal teams, or in fact better Arsenal teams than this in some cases, would have lost that game as well. They would have gone on to actually find a way to lose it altogether. So I'm trying to be sort of philosophical about it. But it's a draw and it's boring.
But are you not in a situation where, like, you've got players who are kind of thinking about possibly leaving the club? I mean, that it's that lack of closing out that game, obviously in Aubameyang's hands in many ways in that match. But like, he's going to look at that and go, I want to play football. I want to win stuff. I want to play Champions League football. You know, and they'll get an almighty fee for him. They'll bring in Moussa Dembele. I think they're very keen on now. Leon are out of Europe. Is it like 70 million they're talking about?
I don't know if we'd get a player like Dembele who'll be in demand elsewhere.
But it just makes me sort of think that it's just the same thing over and over again. Get a big ticket French forward player in, or French based forward player, and the cycle just begins again.
Mm.
With Arteta, Jim, obviously being an Arsenal fan, I feel like we're still all kind of getting to know him as a manager, and I feel like last night we saw what type of angry Arteta we're going to get. And he's one of those that gives you one word answers.
Quiet
he's
fury.
Angry. Yeah.
Seethe.
Yeah. It's like that kind of quiet anger that you see just burning through his eyes.
Yeah. Like, he's annoyed at the interviewer for asking a question they obviously know the answer to.
Absolutely. Well, he was very angry, particularly about Jamie Vardy smashing Mustafi in the face with the studs. And not getting a red card for that. Yeah.
When you word it like that, it does. Yeah.
When you use such a motive language like smash. it was more of a raking, I would say. Raking over the face.
I think everything looks worse in slow-mo, doesn't it? Let's point that out. It was a difficult one because they didn't look at it at the time. And I don't really know why.
The camera angle that I saw first didn't have Vardy's head in it. And I was like, these things happen. You see Vardy look at him and rake his studs over his face. Sorry, that's a red for me.
Do you think it was intentional then?
Yeah, I think it was.
Do you think?
Or certainly just a kind of like, if I get something on him, it's a bonus. Mm. Otherwise, I've got plausible deniability if I swing my leg at his head.
Well, plausible deniability is an absolute facet of not clear and obvious, isn't it?
Yes.
And if there's anybody who can shit house within the rules like that, we know that it is Sir Jamie Vardy. He's just Vardied him, isn't he? Vardy's going to Vardy. What can you do about it? There's nothing you can do about it.
Okay, would you not see? Could you not have retrospective action on that one?
Possibly, but he'll find a way, won't he?
Find a way of Vardying that.
Yeah.
Well, it was written in the stars that he was then going to go on and score an equaliser, and that's exactly what he did. But even for that goal, VAR took forever. And again, it was one of those situations where it was like, who are you looking at that's offside? Perez or Vardy? Yeah. What's the situation here?
To be fair, I did watch that Perez kind of possible brush about a million times, and I was in 10 minds whether he actually touched on it. And then I think, of course he didn't touch it. But then even if he did,
is it
blocking the keeper?
Yeah, exactly. That was just, it was an annoying moment. And I imagine as an Arsenal fan, Jim, watching that, you must have been like, I mean, this is definitely not going to be given as offside.
Completely, Like, this is bad for Villa, and this is not going to be given as offside.
There's water in the VAR.
There we go. Those are last night's Premier League games. There was a game that caught our eye in Europe, though, in Italy. This was mental. AC Milan 4, Juventus 2. And Juventus were 2-0 up. What on earth happened?
I mean, everyone's talking about them. I think they're playing Atalanta next. And obviously, they could probably seal it with that particular match. Atalanta have got a lot of goals in them. More goals than anyone else in Serie A. I would be worried about my defensive display. But, I mean, I would have taken that match back in, what was it, 2003 when they played in Manchester in the final? Like, it was an insane game of football. You got Sandro at 3-2 down, chasing. He decides to cross the ball across his own box. Like, he's 29. Yeah. He's not a rookie. He's not like 21 or something. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I just love, like... I love that Zlatan is still doing it for a club like Milan. Like, he can't run now. Like, he was never the fastest, but he's like, I see him as almost like this mystical sort of ninja tree that's kind of come to life.
It's like he's not a real human, is it?
No, it is. It's like he's one of those sort of superhuman bracket athletes, like Messi and Ronaldo. Like, obviously he's slightly different, but they just seem to operate on a different level. But he's still, you know, obviously it's two penalties in about 3 days, isn't it? Because they beat Lazio 3-0 at the weekend as well. Just love it. Just like, if we can't be like the Milan of old, we can spoil it for everyone else.
Yeah, it was a proper football match, wasn't it? Now, there's four more games tonight. Oh, God, there's so much football, isn't there? Sheffield United taking on Wolves, West Ham, Burnley and Manchester City against Pete's Newcastle. They're the 6 o'clock kickoffs. What do you think the score's going to be, Pete?
I think it's going to be scant revenge for getting dumped out of the FA Cup, but I think it's going to be 3-0 to Newcastle United.
Yeah, I'd love
or
that.
Or possibly not.
And similarly, Brighton take on Liverpool. I also think it's going to be 4-0 to Brighton.
Yay.
No, we've never beaten Liverpool in the Premier League, so I don't see that changing.
No, I think Liverpool need to buck up their ideas after a couple of poor performances, and I think you're going to be put to the sword. Yeah.
Me too, and I'm glad I'm not here tomorrow to talk about it. One final thing before we go, which is just amazing. We all love Neil Warnock.
Yeah,
he's been spotted around the borough riding his bicycle in full kit.
Middlesbrough looked nice. I mean, is
Why
it definitely
are you surprised?
Well, it looked more like Yarm than Middlesbrough. It looked like
somewhere
a little bit more pleasant, which I imagine. So I imagine he probably lives in quite a nice house near there, or maybe commutes. I don't know, but he probably doesn't commute on his bike in full Middlesbrough kit. Was it?
Yeah, full kit.
I just saw he was just wearing some amazing. He had the full helmet, the spectacles. He had the sunglasses on.
All Middlesbrough branded.
Well, Middlesbrough branded.
I imagine he had a Middlesbrough helmet.
Give me everything. And then you got in team shop.
It was cute though. Whoever was filming it tweeted it, and as they overtook him, they went, "All right, Neil," and he gave it. Aye, lads. Oh,
all right, lads. He gets it, doesn't he? You know, I think Warnock knows that he's clearly like trying to ingratiate himself into the town. You know,
by going on a bike.
That's what he's doing. He's doing a little
wheelie.
Sort of Warnock PR tour.
What if he does a skid and kills a kid? Hurts his knackers on a but dustbin lid.
Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah, I feel it's unlikely.
Okay.
But yeah, great to see Neil Warnock getting out and about, keeping himself fit.
Yeah, I mean, don't shout at people from cars. Yeah. Especially when old men
imagine if you killed Neil Warnock.
Yeah.
Just trying to get a viral video. don't do that.
That's all from us. Pete, Jim, thanks for your company. We'll be back with another ramble tomorrow. Kate, Luke, and you're back again, Jim.
I am, yeah.
Nice. Very biblical.
Busy boy.
If there's a Kate in the Bible, I don't know. Might be. Hanging around.
My voice has survived. I'm amazed. Right, see you again soon, guys. Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.